Good afternoon. It's On the Mark. Great to have you with us as we debate the NBA to start. We got six topics, six outstanding topics. My name is Mark Harmon. You're Jake Valerius. I'm one of my least favorite people today, but I can't wait to be with you on the show. So let's start. Let's go here. Rockets, Warriors. This is the hubbub. 17 wins in a row for the Houston Rockets, but they can't beat the Golden State Warriors, right? Because they're the Golden State Warriors. By the way, the Warriors have won six in a row. Who is going to win in the playoffs? And by the way, they should be playing in the NBA Finals. Right now, Adam Silver should do something, switch the leagues, so we'll see a Rockets-Warriors Finals. As much as I love seeing LeBron there, I think that really should be the Finals. But who do you got, Rockets-Warriors?
Got to be the Warriors. I mean, huge credit to the Rockets for what they're doing right now. The 17-game win streak's absurd. Harden, CP3, super fun to watch, all that stuff. But the Warriors are playing at, what, 75%, and they're a game behind this team that is everybody's raving about. They have a better offensive rating right now, maybe the edge. Rockets, I think they have a better defensive rating, but defense tends to be the sort of thing that improves when you start trying, like when you get into the playoffs. And we were having the same thing about the Cavs last year when they dropped the one seed, and they crushed everyone in the playoffs. And Warriors are much better than that Cavs team. So.
Well, let's talk about this backcourt. First, let's try to make a case for the Rockets. So I'm going to try to make a case for them. You got Chris Paul and you've got James Harden. They're averaging 17 assists combined a game. That is some historic stuff. It's better than Steph. It's better than Klay as far as dishing out the basketball. You also have James Harden, who's probably going to win the MVP this year, right? I mean, I think he's the strongest candidate. LeBron's ridiculous. I'm not trying to take anything away from anyone, but it looks like Harden is going to be your MVP. Okay, you also got James Harden. A lot of confidence coming out of the mouth of James Harden. This is the year. So there's the point being that you do have to have belief. The Rockets seem to believe in themselves. Clint Capella's having a career year. Why? Because James Harden and Chris Paul are making it super easy for him. He's shooting 65%. I mean, and they also, by the way, have beaten Golden State 2 out of 3 times. I mean, I'm starting to build a case here now.
I do. I think the Rockets deserve huge credit. The fact this is even a conversation right now is something that I did not expect to be the case at the beginning of the season. I thought Golden State were going to run away with it in the regular season, easy one seed, cruise into the finals. This is a real matchup, a matchup worth discussing now. But again, you know, I know it's not fun to keep coming back to the same point, but the Golden State we're looking at right now, to me, is a shadow of the team we're going to see once the playoffs start.
Eric Gordon, love him off the bench, right? He's caused problems for Golden State.
These guys are knockdown shooters. They've caused problems again, but they've caused problems in the regular season. Steph is back at his MVP caliber level. I think Harden deserves to win, like you said, but Steph is back to his best. Durant is Durant. He is the best individual player on either team, in my opinion. Klay, ridiculous defense, the best shooter, spot-up shooter on either team who isn't sort of a heavy ball-handling type guy. Draymond Green, probably the best defender on either team with respect to Clint Capella. And they've done it. They've been there. They've done that. Of course the Rockets are confident. How can you not be confident?
Well,
but they're not better.
I wouldn't necessarily mind hearing out of Houston, look, we're going up against a Golden State Warriors team that really no one thinks can be beaten. And that's what we're trying to do. So we are the underdog. I don't care if
anytime any MVP type candidate says that is, oh, this guy's pathetic. He doesn't think he's better, which is dumb, but that's the way it is. So, you know, they have to say, we believe in ourselves. We think we have a chance.
And forget about the words. Just, I think on the court, it's going to be Golden State is going to have a tough time stopping Houston. Nobody stops the Rockets. I mean, they're going to have to outscore them. Now, most likely they will, but you know, Harden's having his best season defensively too. At least he certainly is trying. The eye test, if you look at it, like, okay, you're actually playing defense, and numbers wise, he's got the most steals he's ever had in his career. So those, I mean,
there's been a huge uptick for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, when you have offensive players as good as the Warriors do. Same case with the Rockets. It's not really about stopping them. It's about trying to limit them as much as you can. And seeing Steph run Harden around the pick and roll, I'm taking Steph every time.
All right, before we move on to our next topic, do you know how many losses Houston has against the Western Conference?
Like 2 or something?
Against the West, they've got 8. Golden
8.
State's got 11.
Okay.
It's 3 less. 8.
Again, but you know, just the Rockets are at full steam, 100%. Warriors, I don't think, are.
All right, let's move on to topic two as we go to number 2. Who is the most dangerous team in the West outside of Houston and Golden State? Because you got everybody bunched up, 3 through 10, really. And I'll give you the floor first here, Jake. Who do you look at as the most dangerous team in the West? I can't wait for what I think you're going to say.
This is more kind of with the playoffs in mind, but I think the Timberwolves, just about with Jimmy Butler coming back in time for the playoffs, they were more or less the third seed before Butler went down. Obviously, there's been some difficulty since he's gone, but I think with him back, they reemerge as the third best team in that conference. You know, I'd love to see the Spurs get Kawhi back, and I think in that case, they immediately jump up just because they're the Spurs and Popovich is a genius, and that's what the Spurs do, but I don't think that's going to happen, or at least I think it's doubtful that's going to happen. We know Jimmy's going to be back for the playoffs. We know what the Wolves look like with Jimmy on the floor, and I think of all the teams, they're probably the best.
So you believe, by the way, you didn't mention that the Timberwolves signed Derrick Rose today.
I don't want to talk about that because it's offensive to me.
I think it's great that the Timberwolves signed Derrick Rose. I'm really happy that he's reuniting, and I've got another trade from Minnesota, which is Gorgui Dieng heading on out, and then I got to trade Jeff Teague as well, and you send those to New York and LA respectively. Doesn't really matter which one, and then you bring back the great Joakim Noah and Lou Alding, and you've really created the Bulls again.
Then I think what Taj, you could do to top it off, you could trade the Target Center in Minneapolis for the United Center in Chicago and the jerseys, and just switch the whole franchise.
Why not?
Save yourself the trouble.
I think it's great.
This is terrible, and I hate it. Well, and I don't want to talk about Derrick.
Well, let me just, the big flaw though in your theory is Jimmy going to come back and be Jimmy? I think that to me is a concern.
But think of the type of player Jimmy Butler is. This relentless, competitive guy. Any setback, he's going to fight through it. He's going to play through it. And you know, obviously, there's a doubt. Anytime there's a doubt, especially a knee injury, raises questions. But just the sort of character he is, I would always back Jimmy Butler to respond well to this sort of setback.
I've also not haven't liked their chemistry all year long. I think they've relied too much on Jimmy. I'm not saying that's why he got hurt, but the way they play, it's like Jimmy's ball stopper, and
They're a flawed team.
I don't like it.
But I still think they're the third best.
So let me give my answer to the question here. When the question is most dangerous team in the West outside of Houston and Golden State, I am going with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're the seven seed right now, but they're only three losses back of the three seed. So they're all jumbled together. So we can throw out, you know, where they're sitting right now. You have Russell Westbrook. You have Paul George. I do believe in stars. So there's that. Let me give you some stats. Paul George, this year, what does he lead the lead in? Deflection. Still getting his hands on the most balls of anybody. So you got that Spider-Man come playoff time. That's got to be a factor when you're matching up.
I thought you were going to come with something better than deflection.
I like a good deflection. I'm looking for something here. How about, I also like 50-50 balls. Who's got the best 50-50 ball stat in the league right now? I'm looking for hustle plays. Like, for me, the Thunder, I know you're going to score. I know Russell's going to score. I know Paul's going to score. The reason why I'm bringing this up is they have to do more than that. 50-50 balls, Russell Westbrook, number one in the NBA in 50-50 balls, Russell. So there's that. And Carmelo, for the just one time, do something in the NBA. Just one time, give me a clutch performance in the playoffs. Like, I just look at the talent on Oklahoma City and look at the talent of everybody else, 3 through 10. And if there's going to be a stunner, I'm sticking with the Thunder, which,
I mean, I guess to give you your due, I think they do maybe have a higher ceiling. Just because Russ and Paul George are absurdly good. And when it clicks for those guys, it's something special. But maybe a little underappreciated, losing Roberson to that injury
hurt
their defense.
But they did just sign Corey Brewer, which I think will help them. I mean, it's not the same, but they have tried to address that. And you're absolutely right about it. Roberson's been a big piece. They went 2-5 in the first seven games since he went down. And, you know, eye test-wise, you just look at them like they don't look the same defensively. They don't look as connected. So, but I'm hoping that Corey Brewer will make that difference.
Yeah.
Which you can't. I mean, they're not going to get Andre Roberson back. All right, let's move on to LeBron James and the King, and just another ridiculous performance last night in Denver, hitting some shots that I've never seen him hit myself. But so the question is, and LeBron's calling this the best season, the best that he's ever played in his 15 years in the league. Is LeBron at his best right now, year 15? Is this the best LeBron James?
No. His season has been absurd, and it's ridiculous that his 15th season is even in the discussion of the best seasons of his career. So, you know, props to LeBron. This guy is absurd, and I love watching him. But I think I was looking back over his career, 2012, 2013 in Miami, shot 40% from deep, was, you know, close to a triple-double, was way high 50s in shooting percentage. Younger, little faster, you were just a little more confident that the body was going to hold up when the going got really tough. To be fair, better team around him, more functional team around him. And I do sort of enjoy watching this more sort of cerebral playmaking version, but just in terms of who do I have in one series to build my team around, I'd take that 2013-2012 version.
So I like to go on a – I'm going to give you the macro and the micro view. I want to start with the micro. The micro is the final 3 minutes last night in Denver, where my biggest criticism of LeBron over time is that last 3 minutes of a game, give him the basketball, and he's better off setting somebody else up. And so, like, when you compare him to Michael or whoever, like, that to me is, I've never really trusted that he's going to hit some ridiculous shot. Last night, he drove down the lane, knocked over Jokic, and hit a layup. Could have been an offensive foul, but it really was a block, and so it just trucked his way for a layup. That was a strong, ridiculous play that only LeBron James can do in the league right now. Then you throw, he's going left around a screen. He's not even balanced, and he buries a three from 3 feet behind the line. Absurd shot. Then he starts all the way on the right side, cuts across left, fades away from 18. Ridiculous tough shot. By the way, this was a close game. All two, it was, you know, they were up two in these possessions. Hits that shot. And then after that, he hits a falling away, step back in the corner, preposterous shot. And for me, like, I've never seen LeBron do stuff like that consistently down the stretch where, you know, no matter what, no matter how many guys they throw at him, he's going to make the shot. He's not going to give it to Kyrie. He's not going to be bailed out by Ray Allen in the corner to pull off a ridiculous win in the finals. He's going to do it himself, and he did it himself last night. And this season, there's been a ton of them where it's just been him. The win over the Timberwolves right before the trade, where he's scoring all the points down the stretch. So to me, this is the best LeBron. And you look at him stat-wise, you go macro view, he's never averaged 9 assists in a season. He's doing it this year. It's the second most rebounds he's ever averaged in a year. He's at 8.4. His tops is 8.6. And he hasn't averaged 27 until the season you mentioned. So all his numbers are up too. And, like, the eye test, like, these are ridiculous plays.
I do think there's an element of he's sort of just at a point in his career where he's so good, he's like, oh, I'm going to try and, you know, raise my assist this season because right. that's how good I am, and I can do this, and I'm a completely absurdly godlike athlete, so I can do whatever I want. And that is cool. I love watching that, and I might prefer this version to earlier versions, but
he's more
the Cavs' record is not a ringing endorsement of his season. And I know he's been absurd on an individual level, but for a guy who prides himself on playmaking, the fact that he's allowed the team to slump, even if it was to force trades, even if it was to make the team better for the playoffs, the fact he's allowed that to happen is a mark against this LeBron season, in my opinion. That wasn't happening back in Miami, especially in those earlier years when he was still at his very best. And you know, you talk about these late game situations. Look, I did not look through every late game situation in that 2012-13 span, but look, he won games late. The idea that he didn't is a myth. And on top of that, you don't need to win games late when you're up 20 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm not saying he didn't win them, but the shot making is just, and I just think he's way more comfortable in his own skin. And
I think that's true. I agree with that.
And he's also, I mean, you're talking about the up and down of the season. I mean, they lost 5 of 7 to start the year. Then they go and they win 18 of 19.
And here's a question. Is there any player in the NBA whose this current LeBron season would not be their best season ever? Is there any player in the NBA who their best season is better than the current season LeBron is having?
No. No, absolutely not.
That's pretty special.
100%. So, all right, let's move on here to question 4, and we're moving to the NCAA tournament, which is coming quick here, Selection Sunday, this coming Sunday. And it's the age-old question. Should small conferences receive an automatic bid? Should the Radfords of the world play in the NCAA tournament when they're clearly not one of the top 68 teams? But is the romance of the conference tournament and having that team in there to get – most likely walloped as a 16 seed or 15 seed, 14 seed. Is that part of the NCAA tournament charm?
Yes, absolutely. This is why we care. Like, let's be honest, most people who watch the college, you know, NCAA tournament don't know anything about college basketball. They tune in for 1 month a year because these games are fun. There's the possibility of upsets. They can see guys they've never heard of try things. Like, sure, you may water down the quality of the tournament at the lower end of the spectrum, but the big powerhouse teams who actually have a shot of winning, the Dukes, the Kentuckys, the North Carolinas, they're all in the tournament. It's not like you're going to give it, you know, a tournament spot to some crappy team. They're going to lose, and they took the spot of a team that were going to win it. I just don't buy that.
Who's the number one team you like to see lose in the tournament?
Ooh.
I mean, I have a lot. Give me Duke. Give me Kentucky. Who do you like to see lose? Give me.
Yeah, I mean, okay. The usual suspects.
So, but here's, like, the problem for me. Like, when I watch, if Duke plays Mercer State.
Mercer State, big time.
Right.
Big time program.
You're rooting for Mercer State.
Yeah.
But then the next game, I would rather root, like, it's more fun to root against Duke in the next game. Like, you miss them when they're gone. Like, it's, and then Mercer State's playing, like, Oklahoma, and I don't care. Oklahoma's playing Duke. I'm cared about the game because I'm rooting for the upset. So it's like a catch-22. I want the big teams in there because I like rooting. It makes the game more interesting for me.
But which, if they switch it up and they guaranteed spots for these smaller colleges who win conferences, they win their crappy conference tournament.
Right,
which teams miss out?
Right, the sixth team in the Big Ten.
Right. Does anybody care about that?
I mean, I would rather see the sixth team in the Big Ten, Nebraska or Indiana or whoever. I'd rather see that team try to pull an upset and actually have a shot at it, in theory, versus some team out of – I picked – here's my solution, by the way. I've got 16 small conferences where you couldn't name a team unless you looked it up. The America East, who plays in that? I have no idea. The American Athletic Conference, the Atlantic Sun, the Big Sky, the Big South, the Horizon League. Who knows? The Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, the MAAC, the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. You don't know who plays in these conferences unless you went to those schools. By the way, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just naming – that no one cares about the Northeast Conference, the Patriot League, the Southern Conference, the Southland Conference, the Southwestern, the SWAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference. So here's 16 conferences, right? I'm going to take the conference champion from all of them, and I'm going to have a Sweet 16 tournament, and I will take the two teams that make it to the championship game in that 16-team tournament, rather than all those teams having their own conference tournaments. You'll have a 16-team conferences that people don't care about tournament, and the first two teams that made it to the championship game, they'll play that championship game, and they both get in.
So just tournaments for everyone.
Well,
should go even lower.
A tournament?
You should find, like, 16 more crappy conferences and get them to have a tournament.
Let's anoint the best team.
More games. Double the number of games in the season.
Wouldn't you be
These guys can do it. They got nothing better
to
do.
Would you be more interested in watching that line up all those conferences against each other or the teams in those conferences?
I would not watch that tournament if you paid me.
I think you would.
If you paid me, sure. But I would not watch that tournament if you didn't pay me.
But forget
about which is what you are going to do.
Take you out of the equation. Do you think more people would watch it? What I just created, a brilliant 16-team.
But if what we care about is making the NCAA tournament as good as possible, making a completely unrelated separate tournament to add two teams doesn't seem worth it.
But it whittles down. Instead of having 16 teams, that
are all those conferences going to sacrifice their conference tournament? Are they going to agree to that? To add, five games to their season? I don't buy it.
I mean, logistically, I think it would be very hard to get that done. I would agree. That's not going to happen.
That's a good starting point for a suggestion.
But if you gave me the two best teams out of that 16, I think you just created
You like schools from worse conferences as long as there's not too many of them.
Right. Yeah, and just a nug with, 17,000 of them. Just two cute stories.
17,000.
16, 17, 18. I left off some conferences. Like, there's 18 conferences that we could boil this down to. All right, here, let's do a little baseball spring training, topic number 5. And the Houston Astros had just an incredible season last year, but no team, and they're the defending champions, but no team has repeated since the 98, 99, 2000 New York Yankees. So the question on the table is, will this be the year? And I was hoping it was last year with the Chicago Cubs. I thought they were going to do it. Didn't work out. But will this be the year that we'll finally get a repeat champion? Will the Astros repeat?
No. It's so tough. Nobody repeats. Like you said, it's been, 18 years now since this happened. MLB has got to be one of the hardest sports to predict, especially in the playoffs. Weird things happen all the time. The Astros nearly lost to the Yankees this year, a Yankees team people thought weren't going to make the playoffs, and then get to the ALCS and nearly beat, you know, a heavily favored team with home field advantage. So
who's going to beat the Astros? What do you like?
In the like AL?
Yeah.
I think the Indians could have a very good year. I think people they disappointed in the playoffs last year, but their regular season was very, very good, and people are kind of sleeping on them. The Yankees have strengthened a ridiculous amount. That lineup is frightening. The bullpen is frightening, and the starting rotation is very solid.
Right, but you didn't have Justin Verlander last year for the full season. You have him this year. Now, he's a regression candidate.
But the issue isn't the full season. It's the postseason.
Okay, so...
Plus, he's old, as you said.
Okay, well then... Okay, you had Garrett Cole, who you're going to have in the postseason, which you didn't have last year, right? That's an addition. Your bullpen was atrocious last year. I would think Will Harris, Ken Giles will be better this season. You also have the experience of going through, so confidence, right?
I feel like this happens every single year. We see the World Series champion, and we're like, oh, hey, they have, you know, the same players that they did last time. They're going to win, and then they never win. This was the same with the Cubs. Everybody looked at that Cubs team and were like, they kept everyone important. You got some key players who are still young, growing, improving, and... You know, there was a time in that season where we didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. Like, things change so much. There's a target on your back as the defending champs. This Astros team, I hope, is going to be around contending for a long time. But if you're offering me Astros or the field, I'm going to take the field every time.
Well, and logically, yes. But I really do think that this Houston team, with guys that have not hit free agency yet, Jose Altuve is still, I would think, a highly motivated player. Dallas Keuchel, Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa missed 2 months last year, and I know you're pointing out that come playoff time. But here's a guy that's I would think is going to win an MVP in his career. I mean, all these guys have a lot of upside left. Now, Yuri Gurriel is a guy that I don't think will perform quite to the same level, but I really think the Astros have as good of a chance ending into the Cubs last year. That was like a 108-year thing. That was the first World Series for Houston, but the Cubs had so much attention on them. I mean, they were on every late-night talk show. It was just to me, it's a little bit different, a little less. There was a lot of celebration for Houston, but not the same as Chicago, and I think that actually helps them. All right, last one. Let's go surprise team. Let's go the opposite end. There's always a surprise team in MLB who jumps up this year. Who will be the surprise team of 2018 that gets into the playoffs like your Minnesota Twins did last year?
I'm looking at the Mets. I see a team that last year was expected to do well, to be a playoff team, to possibly be a contender, and a team where every single thing that could have gone wrong went wrong. The season nosedived fast. Syndergaard was injured. Everybody else was injured. The whole thing was a mess. And it just went from bad to worse. Obviously, in New York, a lot of, you know, high-profile market. Things got pretty ugly, especially with the Yankees having a good year. Now everybody's kind of forgotten about them. Syndergaard's back. Still got Jacob deGrom. Cespedes is still a dangerous player. Adrian Gonzalez. You know, that looks to me like a good team. On top of that, they're in a bad division.
They are.
The Phillies and Braves are rebuilding teams. The Mariners are going to lose over 100 games. Probably they're a mess. Nationals obviously favorite for the division, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets sneak that wild card spot first or second.
If the Phillies sign Jake Arrieta, I like the Phillies as a surprise team. Somebody's going to sign Jake Arrieta.
You've got too much of an obsession with former Chicago players.
I do. I have a Jake Arrieta crush. I'm going with I'm going the opposite coast, and I'm going with the 64-win, 98-loss San Francisco Giants of last year, where everything, you talk about things
going wrong. That's a lot of losses.
I mean, they were horrendous. Mark Melanson couldn't close out a Little League game. He's got to have a bounce-back year. Will Smith from the left side of that bullpen should be better, so I'll go there. Plus, in the tanking world that we live in, the San Francisco Giants actually went out and got veterans who can play. And Andrew McCutchen, who I think has something left to prove and looks, to me, real good in that outfield, not playing center field. McCutchen, I've always loved him. I'm going to think he has at least one good year left in the tank here in San Francisco, being around a lot of veterans wanting to prove himself. I would think I think a change of scenery works for him. And also, look, you brought on Evan Longoria.
I do like that trade.
I mean, you just freed him out of miserable Tampa Bay where they were, you know, going south and souther. So those are two veterans in that lineup to a bounce back. I think Buster Posey's got something left in the tank as well, right? Madison Bumgarner, don't you have another good year? Brandon Crawford, come on. I mean, there's a lot of talent in San Francisco. Now, and you look at the Western Division, that's
tough,
a little bit – that's
tough division.
That's my problem. But let's go,
and
let's
the
go
other,
wild
the
card.
Other thing is we're looking at NL Central as well. There's probably going to be one of those teams is going to be a wild card, you'd think. The Brewers have – gone loco this offseason and completely retooled. Cubs are obviously super dangerous. St. Louis is always a threat. It's going to be a very, very crowded wild card race.
Milwaukee, sign Jake Arrieta. Do something smart. Pitch him against Chicago. They went nuts, as you've mentioned. And you go out and get Christian Yelich. You went out and you got Lorenzo Cain. Pitching is a thing that you need. He's sitting right there. One of them, get Alex Cobb. I don't do Lance Lynn. Pay for Jake Arrieta, Milwaukee. Hello. All right. Those are the six topics from today. On the mark, wrapping up here. Great job, Jake. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Do you still hate me?
No, I actually feel more warmly towards you after
Thanks.
Rocks. It was a wonderful experience, the show. We're with you every week. Normally on Wednesdays. Today we went on Thursday because I was out of town. It's great to be with you today. Hope you enjoyed On the Mark.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.